This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. When we think of classic American superheroes, a few names might come to mind. Captain America, Wonder Woman, and maybe this guy.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Superman has been an American icon since 1938 when he appeared in the first issue of Action Comics. But the times, they are a-changing. Superman renounced his American citizenship last month in the 900th issue of Action Comics. He said he didn't want to be seen as an instrument of American policy. Now, that's a bold statement for this alien from Krypton, and a reflection of our times, I suppose. What does it say, and what do we see in that reflection, and what can we learn about ourselves by peering into the pages of a comic book? Here to help us figure that out, we have Hillsborough writer James Maxey. He is the author of the superhero-themed novel Nobody Gets the Girl and the Dragon Age fantasy series. Also joining us on the phone from California, Henry Jenkins, a media scholar at the University of Southern California. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good
to be here.
Henry, let me ask you this. Superman renounced his citizenship in a recent issue of Action Comics. In the issue, Superman's decision comes after he goes to Iran to support protesters. Tell us what happens.
Well, a lot less than I think the news media has wanted to make of this. This is a story in the very back of the 900th issue of Superman. It's not by a staff writer. It's not part of the core continuity. It's a kind of what-if scenario. But the scenario is Superman tries to intervene and prevent the government of Iran from killing protesters. When he gets back home, the government calls him out for it because he didn't get authorization, and he says, I don't work for you. And he says, if this is going to continue to be an issue, I will renounce my citizenship and become a citizen of the world. What's interesting is we don't actually see Superman renounce his citizenship. That may occur in a future issue. Clark Kent hasn't renounced his citizenship. So it really is a kind of speculation about what Superman's role might be in the world of the Arab Spring, in the world of these protest movements that so many young readers are concerned with right now.
James Maxey, why? What do you make of this kind of speculation in the pages of the comics?
My immediate reaction was, that does Superman have an American citizenship to renounce? He appeared in current DC continuity as an adult. He almost immediately confessed to the world that he was an alien. His only known physical address is the Fortress of Solitude in Antarctica. I would say that he, you know, while he may hang out a lot in Metropolis, he certainly doesn't have an American passport. He doesn't have a driver's license. He doesn't have a Social Security number. He's never produced a long-form birth certificate. I just don't see how he was ever – people might have assumed he was an American, but I don't know that he's ever came forth with the claim that he was an American.
Now, does it mean?
It's interesting. The immigrant rights movement has lately been using Superman as a model of an undocumented worker who's made a difference in this country. So he's long been understood as a figure of immigration and often someone who's sort of largely outside the American context. And indeed, people have described the wearing of the clothes he carried with him from the planet Krypton, there was a blanket he was wrapped up in, as a marker of ethnic identity, so that Clark Kent stands for the assimilated immigrant and Superman stands for the immigrant, the in-your-face immigrant, the immigrant who's proud of where he came from.
And, of course, we know that the people who wrote, especially back in 1938, were very often the children of immigrants. Wasn't that true, Henry?
The history of the comic is most of the superheroes came from Jewish immigrants, first or second generation, living in major cities, trying to tell their stories. And the sort of World War II iconography we associate with Superman beating up Hitler or Toto or Tito, sort of was often premature. That is, there was a push to get us, U.S., involved and invested in the war before the U.S. government was willing to do. And so after, you know, this is what the McCarthy Committee would have called being prematurely anti-fascist. So the superheroes were originally progressive figures that did express the politics of an immigrant community and only later became the establishment figures people anticipate think about today.
Well, you made reference to this earlier, Henry, this fact that here we have Superman involved in what is now being called the Arab Spring. What do you make of that?
Well, I think there's been a long tradition of using the superhero to connect young people to contemporary events and public debates. There's a lot of use of the superheroes after 9/11, and even before 9/11, Alex Ross did a Wonder Woman comic which really questioned America's role in the world and showed her in Afghanistan hiding under a burqa, which she suddenly rips off and defies the Afghanistani government. So we've seen these images before. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It's part of a larger history of sort of saying that the superhero represents the superpowers, America's role in the world. And as we struggle with, you know, is it about nationalism? Is it about, you know, unilateralism? Is it about globalism? Those debates have long been staged through the superhero comics.
And James, it does suggest that there must be, if the publishers of the comics know anything about their audience, an interest, a serious interest in what's going on in the Arab world, for instance.
Yes, I think that today's comic books are geared towards adult readers. I think that they like to have make the superheroes relevant by having them deal with real world problems. At the same time, I think that it's interesting that Superman took a political position in this instance because so much of he could solve so many of the world's problems just by fiat or just by coming out and saying, well, I think my opinion is this. I think Superman normally traditionally has demonstrated a lot of restraint and avoided politics, because I think that, you know, while he is always going to be there to save people from an earthquake or a falling airplane, I don't think that he wants to be seen as a god dictating what he thinks is the correct, say, a policy on abortion, for instance.
So, Henry, why do you think he does this? This does open the door to some kind of political ethos for Superman, one that, as James suggests, he really didn't need. He didn't need to come out and talk about his national identity at all. But in some ways, the publishers felt the need at least to speculate about what that might mean and that it could be important to this superhero.
Well, I mean, I think if we go back to the very origin of the characters, the first 20 issues or so, he didn't fight for truth, justice, and the American way. He fought to defend the rights of the oppressed, which was the original language. He was originally, someone who would often take on the government and fight for the rights of safety of mine workers, fight against poverty, fight against a number of social issues. Remember, it's 1938, 39. He's coming out at the in the midst of FDR, at the end of the Depression and the build up to World War II. So what we've gotten more recently has been a largely apolitical version of Superman. But it's not as if he's kept politics always at arm's length. And I think this is just one of those moments where people were curious what he would do in this context. I mean, after 9/11, a lot of the stories were about where were the superheroes on 9/11? Why didn't they intervene, why they didn't protect us? And that led in comics to, I think, some debates about, you know, whether we should be having stories about gods or whether we should be telling stories of people rising up and working together to overcome their problems. And we've seen some comic books come out of that were really about everyday people working collectively to overcome problems. Yeah. So I think it's part of a larger history and debate that the superhero comics have always been part of.
I think that he mentioned in the Golden Age Superman how he was very involved in these social issues. I think that you're seeing the bleed through of Clark Kent in Superman's actions, because Clark Kent as a newspaper reporter is going out and doing stories about mine safety, and he's doing stories about the death penalty. And, so I think that, Clark is free to delve into these political issues, but he's made this bargain where his other persona, you know, has to, he doesn't want to have that other persona, again, dictate.
Well, and his very terms. Existence as the other persona, the newspaper guy, suggests that there's an everydayness to what needs to be done. And then there are these super events that maybe we need Superman for, but But, you know, covering the city council meeting is the everyday stuff of supporting a strong democracy.
Yes. And you know, he has been all around the world. He's gone to countries where he's seen, you know, children starving and countries where people have no clean water to drink. And he has to come back to America and think, you know, of all the places on earth I've been, you know, a place where a government is held accountable by a free press. And, you know, we treat everyone equally under the law. You know, this is a better way of life than what I'm seeing elsewhere. And I think as Clark Kent, he probably is very happy to pay his income taxes and help purchase civilization.
On the State of Things today, talking about comic books and what they teach us about our cultural values, my guests, Hillsboro writer James Maxey and USC media scholar Henry Jenkins. Just ahead, we'll look at how comic books have reflected America through the ages on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, talking today about comic books and what they can teach us about the world we live in. Hillsboro writer James Maxey is with us. He's the author of the superhero-themed novel Nobody Gets the Girl and the Dragon Age fantasy series. Henry Jenkins is on the phone, a media scholar at the University of Southern California. And James Maxey, before the break, you know, Henry was talking about the changes in Superman once, kind of fighting for the oppressed, taking a real hard look at social issues, then becoming the defender of the status quo. So comic book storylines have changed, and they took a real change in the 1960s. Tell us about that.
Well, in the 60s, when Stan Lee introduced the Fantastic Four and superheroes like Spider-Man, he gave them very much everyday problems. So with the Fantastic Four, they have no secret identities. Their public address is known. And in the day-to-day comics, they're constantly being harassed by their landlord for the noise that the rockets make. They're getting sued by their neighbors for the cracks in the windows that you know, happen whenever the Thing is, you know, pounding his feet. And so I think that it added a layer of humanity to these larger-than-life characters by showing the day-to-day consequences that would unfold and having them deal with these headaches.
And Henry, you have we've got these superheroes like Green Arrow and the Green Lantern who are really taking a look at social issues in the 60s. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Dennis O'Neill wrote a series of stories in the mid-1960s where Green Arrow, who tends to be left of center, and Green Lantern, who tends to be a little right of center, traveled across America and countered everything from racism in the South to anti-war protests, to drugs, to the environmental issues, and sort of took an inventory. It's sort of one of the great journeys across the country, right there with Easy Rider, I think, that grew out of the search in the 1960s to try to find the soul of where America is at. And I think that's left a lasting legacy in certainly the DC universe, which tends to be a little more establishment-oriented than the Marvel universe.
We're talking about superheroes reflecting their times. James Maxey, I know you think that Superman's not exactly taking the all-American capitalist approach. There's certain Marxist tendencies in the Man of Steel.
Yes. I mean, he never charges for what he does. He seems to embody the very Marxist motto of, you know, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. You know, I'm sure that he's never, like, authorized his logo to be used for any product placements. You know, if he were a true American, his costume would be covered with corporate sponsorships. Instead, he's definitely maintained a hands-off view from capitalism.
That's what you get when you let foreigners come in and run your justice system. Henry, another radical time, you had talked about it a little bit earlier, was that period right after 9/11. Tell us about the turn comics took post 9/11.
Well, I think it's worth remembering that both DC and Marvel at that time were headquartered in New York. Many of the writers had views literally of the towers when they fell, and they were deeply impacted by it. But the choices they made were not to go and send the superheroes overseas to smash Osama bin Laden, but rather to stay at home and to challenge the rise of racism toward Arab Americans that came out after the war, to ask some hard questions about America's role in the world. There's a Captain American story which involves a terrorist who tells his own story of being orphaned, being maimed by landmines, his parents had been tortured by Americans and so forth, and asking in which war he was from. And Captain America is sort of stumped because he can think of any number of conflicts around the world where America has behaved in ways that might not have been seen as appropriate by the rest of the world. And so I think we saw in that period people were questioning the direction America could take. It was also a period, though, when there was enormous celebration of the role of public service, of firemen, of policemen, and the roles they played at 9/11. It was a period of time when the mainstream comic writers were working alongside independent artists and writers in the same books, breaking down kind of the classic split that had existed from the underground comics breaking off from the mainstream comics, and sort of a temporary rapprochement between those two worlds of comics. And so I think there's some really amazing stories that came out of that immediate 9/11 period. At the time, a lot of people were saying George Bush had a comic book view of the world and saying it's us versus them. And I think that was a bit unfair to comic books, which generally had a more sophisticated view of the impact of 9/11 and a more progressive view of the impact of 9/11.
Well, let's take a look at the stereotypic view of comic books that would lead one to say George Bush had that view of the world, meaning simplistic black and white, good and bad. Was it surprising, or could any reader of the comics before 9/11, in the immediate prelude to 9/11, see that that comics would have taken or wouldn't have predicted necessarily the kind of vengeful, retaliatory, approach to post 9/11?
Batman's whole gimmick is to be vengeful and retaliatory, and to argue much like some of the people who argued for the extraordinary rendition and the enhanced interrogation techniques.
Torture.
There are some things that you can't accomplish. You can't always get to justice if you're hindered by the law. Mm. And for Batman, he's more than willing to go out and beat up a thug in order to find out who the crime boss is. In The Dark Knight Returns, he famously, holds a thug he's captured, like 40 stories above the street, and threatens to drop him if he doesn't tell him what he needs to know. Mm. And so I think that gut level, we will beat the truth out of you, that what is right matters more than due process, I think is embodied in characters like that. Whereas I think Superman, I think that if he were arresting a murderer, he might have qualms about turning him over to a government with a death penalty or a policy of torture. I mean, Superman in the Silver Age, Superman was practically a Janist. he would not, harm any living thing. And so I think that it's interesting that in some ways what the superheroes didn't do comments on American policy as right. much as what they did do.
Yeah, Wonder Woman sort of is even further out of that in a certain way. That she, coming from a planet of a nation of Amazons, she often represents a feminist critique of what she sees as the patriarchal structures of America. And so sometimes she sides with the U.S., sometimes she directly challenges it in the course of her stories.
James Maxey, you actually wrote a story. We were talking about some of the legal and moral complexities that superheroes face that weren't always really taken into account early on, but now these days seem to. You took a look at one of the moral complexities that might arise in a story that you wrote. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a story called Where the Worm Dieth Not. It came out last summer in a superhero anthology called Masked. And the backdrop of the story, there's a superhero named Retaliator who is sort of a Batman figure. And he was murdered by a supervillain called the Prime Mover. And the Prime Mover was arrested and convicted for his murder, but the Retaliator his corpse was taken by a superhero collector from the future. He was taken into the future and given a new heart and restored to life, but then he escapes back to present time. And so now the Prime Mover is before the Supreme Court facing the question, can your murder conviction stand if the person that you killed is restored to life by a time travel paradox?
Hmm.
And unfortunately, the story ends with the Prime Mover deciding that the trial is the right time to launch his master plan for world domination. So we never get a ruling.
This is what we call a moot question, then. Well, listen, this does raise some very interesting questions about the law and superheroes and what we can learn. So joining us now by phone, we have a lawyer who might be able to tell us what the outcome would have been had not this plan for world domination not intervened. James Daly is a lawyer living in St. Louis, Missouri, creator and co-author of the blog Law and the Multiverse. It uses situations from comic books to explore legal issues. James Daly, welcome.
Thank you.
You heard James Maxey's story. What do you think would happen in such a case? We brought the person you killed back to life. Is there a murder? Can you be convicted of murder?
This is a situation that comes up fairly often in comics, usually indirectly, because comic book characters are famously often killed off, but because those characters are very important, they tend to come back one way or the other. And I think that the answer is that the defendant would probably still be guilty of murder, because by the legal definitions of how someone is defined as being dead, would still consider the superhero to have been killed. And the fact that a miraculous intervention later brought him back to life, I don't think would suffice, because the standard for being deceased is usually more along the lines of whether current medical technology would consider there to be any possible chance of revival. And in that case, since it took a miracle or a technology from the future to accomplish it, I don't think that it would work. But at the very least, even if the supervillain were acquitted of murder, he would still be guilty of something along the lines of aggravated battery or grievous bodily harm or that kind of thing.
And you could certainly get with intent to kill.
Attempted murder, for sure.
Attempted. Your website uses comic book characters as the basis to explore legal issues. What is it about comic books that makes them a good avenue for this?
I think there are two things about comic books that are attractive for our purpose. One is that the comic books themselves have a very rich, compelling cast of characters and scenarios that make it very interesting to consider the legal ramifications. Usually, when people talk about the law, they talk about it either in the abstract hypotheticals, person A sells property to person B, or they use real cases. But the problem with real cases is that they either involve companies or individuals that people don't know about, don't care about. I mean, how many of us know any given person who's in the news in the courts? And so that's not very interesting to most people, and it's hard to pay attention, and real-world facts are very complicated. In comic books, the facts are usually nicely distilled, and everybody knows and loves the characters. Everybody knows Batman and Superman, what their motivations are. Everybody knows what the Joker is on about. And so it makes for good stories.
Earlier, we were talking about Superman renouncing his citizenship, and this is something that you explore in your blog. Tell us about the legal issue involved.
Well, I think that there are two issues. As mentioned earlier, it's not very clear that Superman actually has citizenship, although we think that he can. It's possible for him to have citizenship. Traditionally, Superman was a U.S. citizen because he was granted citizenship of every nation in the world, at least honorary citizenship. And that's something that the U.S. Congress can do. It's very rare, but there are private bills, private laws, whereby somebody is made usually a permanent resident, but can be made a citizen directly by an act of Congress. And also there have been versions of the Superman origin story where he arrived not as a child in a rocket ship, rather in an artificial womb in the rocket ship, and was technically born when the rocket ship opened in the cornfield in Kansas. And in one storyline, he actually became president of the United States and was ruled by the Supreme Court to be a natural-born citizen.
Yeah, but then he did have to produce his long-form birth certificate, I think. I'm not sure. Henry, we're talking about these questions of the law, and of course, superheroes frequently break the law. We heard about Batman, but Superman, for instance, violates international law. He goes into international airspace without permission, all that sort of thing. What do we take from that? What does that tell us about us, that we want to create these characters who can go break the law because we're getting apparently a little sick and tired of being restrained by it? And does it in any way have an impact on how we think about the law?
Well, I think we could, you know, sort of argue that at the core of the superhero in the universe is the question of how do we deal with extreme trauma? How do we cope with enormous loss? Because if we look at most of the superheroes, it begins with tragedy, the destruction of a planet in the case of Superman, the murder of his uncle in the case of Spider-Man, the murder of his parents in the case of Batman. But the same trauma affects the criminals as well, so that almost all of the supervillains have origin stories in trauma. So the question becomes, how do we cope with injustice and trauma in our lives? What's the structures that allow us to do that? Do we do it through the system? Do we do it through the state? Do we step outside the law? What results in Batman becoming good through trauma and Joker becoming evil through trauma? How do we? And so I think there's an ongoing question, a debate underlying the superhero stories about the nature of a just society and the nature of what's our relationship to the law. And I think the superhero comics have allowed us, and been enormously flexible, to allow us to ask that question from many different directions and to explore many different possible answers to it.
James Maxey, what do you think? What kind of impact do you think it has on our thinking about the law?
Well, I think that the type of stories reflect very much the type of crimes that people are really concerned about. We think it's okay, or we think it's wonderful that Batman will swoop down and beat up a mugger who has taken $40 from an innocent citizen. But we turn a blind eye to the fact that Bruce Wayne, in order to be Batman, proudly cheats on his taxes to the degree of billions of dollars a year. He hides these hidden assets of the Batcave. I'm sure he does not pay any license fees for his bat plane or his bat car. And so he is costing society billions, and yet, you know, he's a beloved hero, whereas the mugger who, you know, has just taken $40, you know, gets what he deserves by, you know, winding up toothless and bleeding in the gutter.
Well, James Daly, the mutants in the Marvel universe of comics are often stand-ins for oppressed classes in society. And I know that you've explored this in your blog, whether mutants deserve protected status, do they?
It depends. It's hard to be sure because mutants are a little different than most traditional protected classes because they appeared suddenly. In most versions of the Marvel Universe, mutants sort of just showed up all at once. And so there wasn't a long history of oppression or discrimination as there have been with the most classic example of a protected class, which is race. And so it's not entirely clear which way it would go, but I think there are very good arguments to be made that they could be a protected class, and perhaps a great deal of the anti-mutant hysteria shown in the comics could have been saved or fixed with a couple of good strategic lawsuits.
Henry Jenkins, you heard what James Maxey said too about the, you know, Bruce Wayne may be a kind of a white collar criminal. We turn a blind eye to that. Do the comics do any better job than other media in reflecting some of these complexities? I mean, it is quite true that our criminal justice system criminalizes addiction in the form of drug addiction and substance abuse. And we know that that's a crime. But if you're addicted to money and you're greedy, that's not only not punished in our society, it's rewarded. Do the comic books do a better job at reflecting some of the complexities in our so-called justice system?
No, I wish I could say yes. I'm a huge fan of comics. But I think the reality is that, like other narratives in our culture, white-collar crimes, for example, aren't represented at all or scarcely represented here, unless it's through Lex Luthor's corporations. But even then, it's more about threats to physical destruction than it is about economic malfeasance. I think that they've done some special issues around drugs and the war on drugs, but I don't think they've really dug very deeply into the consequences of what drugs really means as a society. Where it gets depth, I think, in comics is the fact that these characters have continued to exist since the late 1930s. We've seen them change over time, and they're great barometers of shifting attitudes in America around some of these issues. Any other story is much more narrow in the scope. The characters don't grow or don't change or don't reflect those changes of time. So there's something I think that is deep and profound about the superhero over time that may not be present in the individual issues.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Henry Jenkins, a media scholar at the University of Southern California. To hear more of his thoughts, you can go to henryjenkins.org. You can read more about James Maxey's work at his website and blog spot. James Maxey is the author of the superhero-themed novel Nobody Gets the Girl and the Dragon Age Fantasies. You can go to jamesmaxeyblogspot.com. Maxey is spelled M-A-X-E-Y. And James Daly is a lawyer who lives in St. Louis, Missouri, the creator and co-author of the blog Law and the Multiverse, which can be found at lawandthemultiverse.com. Thank all of you for being on the program. Just ahead, a modern take on a superhero story at Man Bites Dog Theater. Jade City Chronicles, just ahead. Stay tuned.